Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, Episode 94, Interviews with Robert Carlyle, Ming-Na, David Ballou, and Robert C. Cooper of Stargate Universe.
I'm John Sprunk. You're listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
Continuing our Stargate Universe episode here at Comic-Con, I am now joined by Robert Carlyle, who plays Dr. Nicholas Rush on Stargate Universe. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Before we talk about the show, could you give us a little background about yourself? And what I'd really like to know is when you knew performing was right for you and how you got started in performing.
This is a different question. This is a really different question. This is good. Well, I guess you're taking me back now quite a few years, and I would say that I was probably about 20, something like that, before there was any notion of acting in my life. I had enjoyed going to the movies as a kid. My father loved movies, you know, and I could go and see any film as long as it was a Western, you know. And so I grew up with all these Magnificent Seven and all of that. So I loved all of that. So it was about 20 years old before I thought about it in terms of, you know, actual acting and being in these kind of things potentially. So that was it. So I joined an amateur dramatic kind of place. It's more of a community centre, we call it back home, community drama. So it wasn't what we like to call Amdram, which you can imagine what that is, you know, tennis rackets coming through the French doors and stuff like that. It wasn't anything to do with that. It was more to do with discovering yourself, I suppose, and devised pieces and improvised little sessions and stuff like that. And it really opened me up as a person. First off, before an actor, I was very shy. I was an incredibly, painfully shy boy. And at that time, I would go red. Even at 20, I would literally go red, even if someone spoke to me, you know. So drama was vital for me, even just in my life as a person, never mind to go on as a professional actor. And it worked. It worked in spades, you know. I suddenly found myself part of this community, a whole new bunch of friends, people who I kind of understood suddenly, and they understood me, and it all kind of worked. It all kind of came together. After that, I did that for maybe 2 or 3 years. Then I went on to drama school, went to the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama in Scotland.
What do you think of as your first big role, like your first break?
There's a bit of debate about this, but I would say, personally, I think it's a piece I did called Cracker, which was on UK TV. I think they remade the show in the US. I think they called it Fitz, if you recall that. It was a wonderful show back home in Britain, for sure. Cracker, on the same lines of Prime Suspect and that kind of stuff. Robbie Coltrane was the main guy. I played a guy from Liverpool, a Liverpudlian. Now, I hadn't played anything outside my own voice at this point. And when I played this part, it was very successful, went very, very well, and people thought I was from Liverpool. And that's what kind of went out, that I was an English actor. Perfect, because it's very difficult for Scots to get the work. And I did maybe 2 or 3 other things after that in accents. Yes, there you go. Same thing, to a certain extent. I think you have to have established yourself 3 or 4 times, you know what I mean, rather than just once over. So once I'd done that and established myself as an actor rather than a Scottish actor, I did another couple of parts where I played some accents, and then eventually I spoke in my own accent in a piece called Hamish Macbeth. And Hamish Macbeth was a little cop show back home in the UK, which went through the roof in terms of the ratings. People really enjoyed it, and suddenly it was there. They went, wait a minute, he's Scottish. How did he get in? But it was too late by then.
When you say there's some controversy, I don't think you said controversy, some debate about what your breakthrough role would be, is that between the critics, you mean?
Yeah, because people tend to say, people all instantly say, it was obviously Trainspotting that did it for you. Others say, it was obviously the full Monty that did it for you. And then later on they say, well, it was obviously when you did Bond that was you established. I keep saying, no, you need to go back further than that, because everything leads on to the next thing. You can't just start in the middle of the book. There's a few chapters before that. So there was a beginning. There's a beginning and a middle and an end to everything, and that was the beginning there.
Well, that's cool stuff. Looking at Universe, I know you're well into your work on Season 2 now. But for the fans, Season 1 just recently ended, so that's still very much fresh in our minds. So this is looking back a little bit farther for you, I know. But looking back on Season 1, what are some of your impressions about how the season went and maybe how your expectations for when you started the show were either fulfilled or just fulfilled differently than what you expected?
I think it was a very brave decision by the creators to come up with this kind of show on the back of Atlantis and SG-1, because there's no doubt that it's an entirely different type of show from those. I think the only similarity sometimes is the fact that it's called Stargate. It's a much darker tone, you know, the characters are, it seems to be much more about the characters, a much more character driven piece than Atlantis or SG-1, which were what they were, and there's nothing against these shows, they were great and people loved them, but this is just a different thing, and I think it was a brave decision for the producers to do that. When they first approached me, I was reluctant, to be honest. That's a really, really a mild word for it, but I was reluctant to get involved. But my manager, John Rubenstein from New York, fantastic guy, knows me so well. He says, "Bobby, I know you're not going to like this." He says, "But I think you should have a look. This character's interesting, you know." So they sent me through the synopsis, and the first thing that hit me was, here's a man who doesn't want to come back. Now that would have almost been enough, in fact, for an actor alone, because that throws up so many questions, so many why questions. Why not? Why is he doing that? Why doesn't he want to do that? So I thought, fantastic, I like this already. But I wasn't entirely convinced, you know, and one of the first things I said to the guys when I got on the phone talking to them was that I'm really, really flattered, genuinely flattered, but why the fuck do you want me to do this? And they said, but, and it was funny because they said, "Well, actually, you know, your reply is kind of why we want you to do it." I said, "Okay, I get it. I'm beginning to get it." Because what they were saying was, if it wasn't going to be me, it was going to be someone like me. So what that then says to me is, this is a different type of show. Because if you're going to bring me on board, it's a different style of acting, a different technique entirely, you know. That's what we want. Fantastic. So then I read the rest of the scripts that they sent through. And to answer your question, the rest of the season then progressed in exactly the vein that they said it was going to. I was very, very pleased, you know, because sometimes they can pull you in and suddenly it ain't what you think it was going to be. I think it was always going to be tough, always going to be difficult to kind of, you know, shake Atlantis particularly from us. I think in the first few weeks of the show being aired, I think there was a feeling of, oh, we don't like this because it isn't what we know. But that, in a sense, is exactly what the producers wanted. They wanted a new audience to come and find this show, and hence the reason why I'm here again, to introduce it to a whole new type of person, I suppose, people that maybe never watched Stargate before. And that's what seems to be coming across to me, certainly from people outside in the street and stuff like that. They tend to say, "Well, I kind of watched the other show, but I really like this one." And that's a fantastic compliment, you know.
Well, I remember the premiere when you the crew's first getting on Destiny, and your character walks up and is looking down, and you have that little smirk, and I knew right then that we were in for something we have never seen before, and that was a beautiful moment.
Well, thank you so much for that. That was deliberately placed as well, just to kind of, I remember talking to the director at that moment. I said, "Well, we smile here, I think." And at that point, they were like, "Do anything you like." And I said, "Well, I'm not taking the piss here. I think this is where this guy's happy to be here."
Looking forward in season two, can you tell us a little bit about some of the conflict changes we might expect among the characters? Because this is a show that's really dependent on conflict within the cast, unlike the other two shows, dependent on conflict coming in from the outside.
Right, and of course the person who's causing most of that happens to be Dr. Rush. He's still at it in the second season, but even more so this time. When we join the second season, we discover instantly, in the first two or three scenes, in fact, that Rush has discovered the bridge of the ship. Not only has he discovered where the bridge is, he knows how to fly the thing now. He's steering it around. They don't know that. He hasn't told anyone this. And what starts to happen is he's under pressure, Rush, suddenly, because the countdown clock, you know, the countdown clock when they stop the ship, it's not activating. So what's happening is the ship's stopping, the clock's not activating, and there's no planets in sight. So everyone's saying, "Well, what's happening? Because it's on autopilot, remember, this ship, we don't know. So Rush keeps leaving the room at these points, coming back in when they've finished speaking about it. So we get to, eventually, episode 7, 7, 8. It's called The Greater Good. During The Greater Good, Rush and Young go and investigate a kind of an abandoned alien craft, which is just outside the Destiny. They hop over there to investigate what's over there. When they're over, it hits the fan. Back in the ship, they find the bridge. They find out that Rush is responsible for all of this stuff. That puts Rush in a difficult position, as you can imagine, because the last time he was left with Young anywhere, he left him on the planet. So what then follows is an 11-page scene between myself and Colonel Young. And it's tremendous. It's something you don't really get in television. You generally get that's a movie thing when you get that amount of pages. 11 pages then followed by a 6-page scene in actual fact after that, where Rush explains everything to him and confesses that yes, he has done this. But not only that, but there is in fact a mission. There has always been a mission. It has never been about going home. This is the moment. It's a game changer, as I like to say around here. Everything changes in that moment. So Young, instead of wanting to kill him, he says, well, what is it? So he reveals and he tells him what which I want to you at the moment, because it's so mind-boggling that it actually manages to get Young on side. So the dynamic changes between Rush and Young in that moment, that they decide to come together and move forward. Don't stop looking behind. Stop saying we don't belong in this ship. Embrace it and move forward. But is he telling the truth?
What a great note to end on. I can't wait for season 2. Robert, thank you so much for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.